31 degrees Kenosha, 39 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm excited about today's morning show because we're going to be talking music and talking theater, two of my favorite things. A little later in the hour, we're going to be previewing for you the next production at the Racine Theater Guild that opens this weekend. It's Clue on stage, the classic board game brought to life on stage. But in part one of today's program, we're talking music with Russ Johnson, Director of Jazz Studies at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. He also teaches trumpet over at Carthage, where I am on the faculty. And Russ Johnson is responsible for creating and overseeing one of the most hotly anticipated musical events of the spring here in southeastern Wisconsin, Jazz Week at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And after a two-year hiatus, thanks to COVID, Parkside Jazz Week is back, and in a very, very big way, with wonderful jazz concerts every night this week, and culminating in performances by the Parkside Jazz Ensemble, joined by some talented high school jazz musicians from the area. So we're going to be previewing all of this in the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show. Russ Johnson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Glad we can have this conversation. We were talking right before we went on the air that this week is spring break at Carthage, and that works out really nicely for you because you have pots boiling on every burner of the stove this week with Jazz Week.
That's very true. It is. I'm very fortunate that they work out this way. We always have Parkside always schedules our Jazz Week is the week before our spring break, so we're on spring break next week, and that's partly so I have recovery time because this week is pretty taxing. But it is by far my favorite week of the year. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. I can imagine. This is something that you created. You're not sure. 2012, 2013, something like that. Tell me what went into your thinking in terms of wanting to put something like this together at Parkside.
Well, for selfish reasons, I want to hear great music. for my students, it's so important for them to hear incredible music played by incredible musicians in a live setting. I mean, so many of our students can hear and check out all kinds of amazing music, but to have it right in front of you is really important. And I think it's an incredible learning tool. It's very different experiencing music live, as you know, rather than on a video screen or through headphones, which is how I grew up listening to music. As an educator, it's an amazing opportunity. And it's not just for Parkside students. This is open to the public, and we want everyone to come and check it out. It's an amazing, especially Monday through Wednesday, the artists we present all do a question and answer afterwards. So they basically present an hour-long set of their music, and then there's like a 40-45 minute Q&A afterwards. And we were talking off the air, I think my students gain as much or possibly more out of that experience as they do, experiencing the concerts. I tell my students and the general populace that's there that, there's no question that's out of bounds. For my students or for younger musicians, you can ask these artists anything. You can ask them how to develop your career, how to practice, what did you work on, who are your influences, what did you have for dinner. It doesn't matter really what the questions are. So, and one of the beautiful things is we do have people all throughout the community, southeastern Wisconsin, that attend, and are curious about the music and the musicians, and they ask fantastic questions. So it's really it's an amazing educational opportunity as well.
The jazz world seems like a huge, sprawling world, and yet a surprisingly small world, in that it seems incredibly interconnected, and a lot of you sort of know each other, work with each other, encounter each other in all kinds of different ways. How much is that a part of these folks who are here for Jazz Week? I mean, how many of them are people that in one way or another you yourself know?
All of them? That's not always the case. This year it happens to be all of them. And it's, you know, I don't want it to, you know, it's not like I'm just trying to bring in my friends to perform. But it is a small world, as you were saying. And I had a pretty extensive playing career before I started teaching at Parkside. I came in January 2010, and I started, I commuted from New York for a year and a half. And then I moved here in July of 2011. So it is a very small world. It is something that, you know, because I had this playing career, and I still have at least pre-COVID, and now I'm not, dare I say, post-COVID. We are definitely not post-COVID, but I'm definitely getting back to more normal, you know, touring schedule and stuff like that. I still tour. I still perform all the time. So for this particular Jazz Week, I wanted to focus on some younger musicians. Leonard Simpson, who is there tonight, Alexis Lambre, who will be there tomorrow night on Tuesday, are both, I would say, guessing mid-20s. But their career trajectory is off the charts. They're both going to be superstars. So, I mean, I've played with most of the people that'll be, you know, performing this week, which is definitely not always the case. But it's a small world, and it's, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to call in favors from friends. And that definitely plays a role. This year, the first three nights are all basically Chicago groups. The Bad Plus, who'll be here on Thursday night, is an international group, obviously, an internationally known group. But in the past, it's kind of been an anchor date for people that were touring. So if word gets out, and believe me, when when word gets out that there's a college that's presenting like a mini festival like this, I get people asking me about this all the time. You know, I get emails constantly saying, hey, if you have an opening in your Jazz Week, I would love to perform. So, you know, for a lot of people that are touring, it can be a great opportunity to have a gig on a Monday night or a Tuesday night. They might play the weekend in Chicago. I mean, the Bad Plus is playing at Symphony Center in Chicago the next evening. Tickets are $99. They're only $10 at Parkside on Thursday. So it can serve that purpose too for touring artists. They can have a nice gig in a great hall for a great audience on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, Thursday night, when they, you know, typically might be problematic plugging in a hole in your tour on one of those nights. So we've been able to draw on incredible artists to come in and play for us. So
fantastic. Yeah. You already mentioned the word COVID, and I was going to ask you maybe twin questions. How painful was it to have to put the Jazz Week at Parkside on hiatus for a year, and then for a second year, thanks to COVID, and how good does it feel to have this back?
I'll answer the second question first. It feels incredible to have it back. And my students that are have been at Parkside for a couple of years are incredibly anxious. And for our first year and second year students, they've never experienced it, Jazz Week before, so they really don't have an idea of what it, you know, what it encompasses, and it's a lot for them. I ask a lot of them. they have to be at every show. It was incredibly painful to cancel it. You know, on a personal level, I put in, I don't know, 80-100 hours, you know, programming this and talking with all the musicians and saying, okay, do you need this? What, you know, gear, all these logistical things. Yeah. So it's a ton of work. And when, you know, we first shut down, it was literally the week before Jazz Week 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
Literally, wow. The week before. So, I mean, I had to contact all these artists and say, and they knew what was coming, you know? So it was really, really painful to cancel it. And as I said, it's just it's such an opportunity for the local community and you know our Parkside students that it's and our students look forward to it every year, right? The people that I work most closely with are related with jazz or contemporary commercial music, and you know this is an opportunity that they and honestly I don't think it exists. I don't know of another school in the country that does a full week-long event like this. I really don't. I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, whatever, toot my own horn or anything. I don't know, you know, and all schools try and bring in guest artists, but I don't know anybody that is able to do a week like this. So it's really special. So it was very painful. It was very painful to have those conversations with the artists, and it was incredibly painful to talk to my students and say, you know, I guess you've probably heard that the school is shutting down. That means Jazz Week is not happening. So, yeah, we're thrilled to have it back. And we had booked the Bad Plus 2 years ago to be the headliner, and we were able to get them back. It just worked out that they were going to be in Chicago the next night. Mm. So it worked out that we were able to bring them in for Thursday night. So incredibly thankful that it's happening again.
Very good.
Yeah.
We're going to do a little sampling of some of these headliners, at least. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of some of them. And I want to start with this young man who's performing tonight with his quartet, Leonard Simpson. Did I read correctly that he's from Milwaukee?
Yes. Yeah, he's born and raised in Milwaukee. He lives in Chicago now. He came back to Chicago about a year and a half ago. He was in Los Angeles at the Monk Institute, which is very prestigious. It's basically like grad school. It's at UCLA, but it's the Herbie Hancock Institute. The Monk Institute is incredibly exclusive. they take one person on each instrument every year.
Wow.
It's a very big deal, and Leonard moved to Los Angeles to do that. And he's an absolutely amazing young musician. He's an amazing musician. The fact that he's young, I guess, is irrelevant. but he's on his way to being a superstar in the music. He has an incredible sound. He's a really great composer. He'll be playing original music tonight. He's somebody that I just feel like is totally on the rise. He's been performing with Kurt Elling's band recently, a very famous vocalist, internationally known vocalist. But Leonard is going to be a superstar for sure.
Let's hear a little bit from saxophonist Leonard Simpson, who again is performing tonight at Parkside. Saxophonist Leonard Simpson and his quartet, they perform tonight at 7 o'clock at UW Parkside's Jazz Week. And will that be in the...
It's in Bedford Hall.
In Bedford Hall, mm-hmm. One of the most beautiful spaces for experiencing and making music.
It is an astonishing room. It's actually pretty versatile. You know, it's the building is 10 years old, so it's, you know, the acoustics in there, they had an incredible acoustician design the place so that it's, you know, you can close all the curtains and make it more, air quotes, dead sounding room for a jazz performance where you're going to have drums or something. It might get a little louder. You can open everything up and the choirs sound fantastic in there. So it's a pretty versatile space and it's aesthetically pretty pleasing as well.
You betcha. It absolutely is. Is that where everything is?
Yeah, everything's in Bedford. Yeah.
Nice to.
Yeah. We take over for this week, you know.
Very good. So let's talk about this incredibly talented pianist and vocalist who's going to be performing tomorrow night. Her name is Alexis Lombre. I'm very impressed by what I have heard thus far. Tell us what you know about her.
Well, I met her for the first time, and we played together last fall. There's a festival in on the south side of Chicago, the Hyde Park Jazz Festival. And there's a really great bass player in Chicago named Ethan Fillion. And he had this project that was based, he calls it Meditations on Mingus, where we played Charles Mingus compositions. And actually that record, and Alexis is on, and I both are on the record, is coming out in the fall on Sunnyside Records out of New York, a really great label. But I heard Alexis, and I wasn't familiar with her, and I heard her, and I was absolutely blown away. And here she was playing the music of Charles Mingus, and there were some very famous pianists that were in Mingus's groups, and she was able to channel all of that history, and yet it was her. And to hear someone who's in, I'm guessing, her mid-20s, have that much of a personality at the instrument, of a unique identity, is really rare. And so then I started checking out her music, and when we, you know, got the go-ahead that Jazz Week was going to happen, I was like, I want to get Alexis in. So it worked out really well, and I'm super excited to have her band here.
And she performs, and you were saying she's also going to be doing a masterclass.
Yeah, she's doing it's either at 3:30 or 4. The contract says 4. I was hoping that we can get her in at 3:30. She's going to be working with Parkside has a really unique program. It's called the CCM, or now it's going to, it was CCV, Contemporary Commercial Voice. Now it's going to be Contemporary Commercial Music Program. Mm. And we're going to have Alexis in to work with a bunch of our voice students and do a masterclass tomorrow afternoon.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, let's sample a little bit of Alexis Lombre. That is jazz pianist Alexis Lombre, pianist and vocalist, again performing tomorrow night at the UW Parkside Jazz Week. For those of you just joining us, Russ Johnson is director of jazz studies at Parkside and the creator and the coordinator of Jazz Week, which is back after a two-year COVID hiatus. And we were just saying off the mic that one of the things that Russ works really, really hard to do is to bring in a variety of jazz musicians, because, of course, there's all kinds of different types of jazz and styles of jazz, and you hear a little bit of just about everything, not literally everything, but a nice array of different possibilities. And certainly you have a cutting-edge jazz act on Wednesday evening, the 16th, namely Joshua Abrams and Natural Information Society. I am fascinated by these folks. Tell us more about them.
Well, Joshua is a Chicago-based bass player who is widely known and respected as a free jazz musician, and I don't really like that term, free jazz, improvised music, I would call it. But he also plays this instrument originally from Ghana called the djembri. And in this band, he plays the djembri, which is kind of a predecessor relative to the bass. This particular lineup has harmonium, bass clarinet, and drums, along with this this Ghanaian instrument that Josh was playing. Josh is, and this group travels all over the world. They just opened a bunch of shows for Yola Tango. This is kind of more groove based, and people think of Joshua typically as being kind of a free jazz player, but this is definitely more groove based and stuff like that. It's really fascinating music and very unique music.
Right, and that's part of what Jazz Week at Parkside is all about. Joshua Abrams and Natural Information Society. They perform Wednesday evening. And then we have Thursday evening, the headliners, The Bad Plus. For anybody listening who's not acquainted with them, explain why this is quite a big deal to have them at Jazz Week.
If you follow contemporary jazz at all, I'm sure you're familiar with The Bad Plus. They tour internationally all year round. They're basically one of the biggest acts in jazz right now. They've gone through a lineup change, so it's a slightly different. There have been pianists. The first two groups, the first group incarnation had Ethan Iverson on piano. Well, then when Ethan left, Oren Evans took over in piano, both amazing pianists. So it's led by Dave King, a drummer, and Reed Anderson, bass player. So when they were making this change this time, they decided to not use a pianist. So they expanded it to a quartet. It features Ben Maunder on guitar and Chris Speed on saxophones. I know both Ben and Chris very well, and they definitely put a cutting edge kind of element. And Reed and Dave are both very much cutting edge musicians. But the thing is, in their history, they write like very catchy tunes, but they've also recorded a lot of pop tunes. They've recorded Nirvana Everybody Wants to Rule the World. They've recorded all these different pop songs. They've also recorded a bunch of classical type things. Mm-hmm. So it's really, they kind of run the gamut, but it's one of the busiest working bands in jazz. They're just incredible.
And you got them.
And we were able to get them. It was a big get for us, for sure.
For sure. The Bad Plus. We'll be right back. The Bad Plus. They are performing on Thursday evening, 7 p.m. in Francis Bedford Hall. And Russ, you were saying that if somebody went down to Chicago to see them perform, you would pay a whole lot more than what you're going to pay at Parkside.
Yeah, they're, like, as I said earlier, they're playing Symphony Center in Chicago on Friday night, and tickets, I don't know what tickets are. $99, I believe.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
to sit in a decent seat. And at Parkside, they're $10. And one thing that we haven't mentioned, the Monday through Wednesday concerts are free.
I was just going to say,
right?
We need to make sure that people understand.
Yeah,
that.
those are free concerts, and it's amazing. And I get help from the Kenosha Community Foundation and the UW Parkside Foundation. And plus, my students go perform at Uline headquarters throughout the year, and they kick in a little bit of money that helps me fund this.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the Monday through Wednesday concerts are free, and the Bad Plus student price is $5, and the general public is $10. And I mean, if you were to go, you know, if they're playing the Village Vanguard in New York, you'd be paying $60.
Yeah,
you know,
easily.
You pay $99 to see them the next night. $10, it's just, you know. Incredible. I would almost rather tickets be 25 or free.
Right. You know,
$10
right.
Just seems crazy to be that cheap to go see them. So,
right. Well, that's cool.
It is amazing.
A neat gift to the community. And then we want to mention, of course, then that on Friday at 12 noon, of course, there's this legacy of noontime concerts at Parkside. And the one this coming Friday at 12 noon will feature the Parkside Jazz faculty, which includes you. I assume
yes.
You'll be doing some playing on Friday.
Sure.
And then explain quickly about the wonderful concert that finishes everything up Friday night at 7 p.m.
So after the noon concert, all the Tremper Bradford Indian Trail will all be on campus for that day. The high schools, local high schools, will be on campus for that day. So after the noon concert, we do master classes with the musicians, instrument-specific master classes. And then I work with each of the ensembles. And then we wrap up the evening with a concert featuring those three groups and then Parkside's Jazz Ensemble.
And so what is that concert going to be like? I mean, what?
It's crazy. For me, it's amazing to hear these younger musicians, and hopefully they'll think about attending Parkside. But it's a chance for me to hear these amazing young musicians coming out of, you know, and we have such a strong tradition of musical excellence in Racine and Kenosha. We're very fortunate to live, you know, in an area where music is highly thought of. So yeah, it's crazy. You know, 120 students will be on and off the stage over the
wow.
course of an hour, but it's super fun. Super
amazing.
Fun. Yeah.
Super. Yeah. And of course, this is also a part of the state where jazz is very much appreciated. It's got a big audience, and there are a lot of different wonderful events where people can enjoy jazz. But boy, none quite tops Jazz Week at UW Parkside. So again, it begins tonight with Leonard Simpson Quartet, Alexis Lombre, Joshua Abrams Natural Information Society, the Bad Plus on Thursday evening, and then things finish out on Friday at 12 noon with the jazz faculty at Parkside, and then the Parkside Jazz Ensemble and area high school musicians Friday evening. You can find much more information at uwp.edu/jazz. And leading it all from the sidelines is Russ Johnson, Director of Jazz Studies at Parkside. Great to catch up with you. Congrats on being able to bring back Parkside's Jazz Festival to an eager, awaiting public. And thanks for being part of the morning show today during what I know is a very, very, very busy week.
It's a pleasure. It's always great to speak with you, Gregory.
You're listening to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. You're listening to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For part two of today's program, we're going to be previewing for you the next show to open at the Racine Theater Guild. It's called Clue on Stage, based at least in large measure on the famous board game and on other sort of iterations. And we have with us in the studio Doug Instanis, who is the director of the production. And we also have with us via the telephone Dan Martino, who is one of the members of the cast, portraying the butler Wadsworth. And we welcome both of you to the morning show. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
So Doug, before we talk about Clue on Stage, let me just give you a chance to kind of recap briefly the way in which the Racine Theater Guild has found itself inching back towards normal with several different productions. Of course, Clue on Stage just being the latest of them.
Yeah, we are so happy to be back after 2 years of cleaning and organizing and trying to do online programming and lots of fundraising. So it's exciting to be back. It's so weird. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I didn't realize this two-year gap is like the longest time I have not been involved in a play in 35 years. And so it's like we're all excited to be back. As everybody knows, we were closed for a couple of years, and we opened up in December with A Christmas Story. And the city was letting us come back. If the audience stayed masked, we were allowed to take masks off the actors, but we needed to have the audience masked. Well, now the city has released that restriction from us, and so masks have now become optional at the Theater Guild. And so we did we had a slight little hiccup in Nonsense where we had to cancel some performances due to COVID, but so far my cast is healthy as they can be, running around you know, a couple hours every night. They're getting their workout. So we're excited. We're excited to be back. We've been able to stay afloat because of all the wonderful donations we've received from our patrons. Jocelyn's been busy writing grants, and the Theater Guild is very lucky to be coming out of this in a strong position compared to a lot of theaters which had to close and close permanently.
Right.
So because of the wonderful support from the Racine and Kenosha community, we're really doing gangbusters. All of our shows have made budget. The audiences are coming back. Many people just say, well, I don't feel safe, but just keep my money.
Wow.
Well, I love that. Wow. We're not going to come to the play, but just keep my money. Mm. So it's not the business model that we hope for, but we're excited. So, and there's been a lot of excitement around Clue, because if you're my generation, or I mean, even everybody, we grew up loving this board game. We grew up loving the silly movie that was made out of this board game, and we're very excited to bring it to life on stage.
So with Christmas Story and Nonsense and Guys on Ice, that's three really kind of mostly silly and very lighthearted works all in a row, and Clue on stage, of course, is very much that way. So I'm suspecting that's not a coincidence or an accident that, to at least some extent, this really light, entertaining fare was chosen very purposefully.
It was, for a number of reasons. One, we wanted kind of small cast shows, so we started with that. You Guys on Ice only had three, and Nonsense five, and Christmas Story was a smaller cast too. Because of all of the COVID reasons and vaccination policies and things like that. And then, you know, everybody's had a really bad couple years. And the last thing you want to see on stage after COVID is Death of a Salesman or mm-hmm. something heavy, and where everybody dies and they're sad. Everybody just wants to forget their problems for a little while. And that's what we're trying to provide. We're trying to give people entertainment, some excitement, some fun, to laugh for a change. And, and I think we've all missed that. We're all kind of doom and gloom. And even in this show where it's doom and gloom and we're killing people, it's funny and it's silly and brings back nostalgic memories. And I think that was the same thing with Christmas Story, you know, these wonderful family memories that we're bringing back. Guys on Ice, just a couple of guys sitting out there talking about life and friendship. And so, yes, you know, we'll work on the art later on. Right now, we're just trying to make people laugh.
Right. Very good. And just quickly, you already hinted on the fact that the Guild is in very good shape and that, to some extent at least, the audiences have really returned. I mean, is that your sense that, by and large, the audiences are back in full force, or is there a certain segment of the population that's still a little bit nervous to come back into the theater to sit amidst a live audience? How does that look right now?
Yeah, I think I may have just misspoken. We've made budget, and we've done a lot better than what I thought we were going to do. But we're still not back to pre-COVID numbers as far as season subscribers go. Our attendances are up. People are coming to see shows, and my expectations were lower. So my expectations have been you know, we've done a lot better than I thought we were going to do, but we're still not back to pre-COVID season subscriptions. Now, hopefully, we're just starting our subscription campaign in a month or so. We'll see if we can get back to where we were. Some people didn't want to come to the theater unless we wear masks, and some people didn't want to come to the theater until we could take the masks off. So,
right.
You know, we've gotten complaints both ways. So we'll see what happens, but we're seeing the numbers go up every show. We're seeing people to come back, and we'll really know in the next couple of months if we get our subscriber base back.
Very good. And in the meantime, of course, I know you also feel really good about the fact that you've been able to do this as safely as you had, with just a small handful of performances having to be canceled for nonsense. But otherwise, all of these productions have made it through unscathed thanks to some really careful protocols that have been very carefully adhered to.
True. We've been wearing masks. We social distance. The actors and crew had to be vaccinated. So everybody's taking it very seriously. But I can't tell you how much fun it was when we started to be able to take those masks off and the actors started to interact. And there was just a whole new excitement, like, we're getting better. We're going to do this. We're going to get back to life as usual. And there's an excitement about that. And that's a real positive energy.
Before we talk about Clue on Stage, Dan Martino, I want to bring you in just to talk about the fact that you are not only back on stage at the Racine Theater Guild for the first time in a while, with fatherhood, among other things, kind of making that kind of a complicated thing for you. So you're back on the Guild stage, but also for the first time in a couple of years, just back on stage, period. You're coming out of a long hiatus, as most actors are, that had little, if any, opportunity whatsoever during COVID to perform. What has it felt like to be back on stage after such a long break?
Well, it was at first it was kind of strange. You kind of start thinking, am I going to remember how to do this? Am I going to remember, you know, how to act, how to behave around a larger group of people and follow the protocols? But it's also so exciting. You forget the joy of presenting something to an audience, which we're very much looking forward to. And being around people, being around a larger group of people. Normally it's, you know, your family, your wife, your immediate family, your kids for a couple of years. And if you spent any time with people, you were, you know, 6-10 feet away, you know, with a lot of space. So that was, it was very exciting. And I can't express how good it felt to be back on stage, especially in the green room even. And then when we moved to the stage, it was just this feeling of joy. That's the word that keeps coming back to me, is joy.
Glad to hear it, and I know audiences feel this similarly. For those of you just joining us in this part of the morning show, we're talking about the Racine Theater Guild's newest production, which is Clue on Stage, which opens this coming weekend and runs through early April. Doug Instanis, give us a little sketch of Clue on Stage for people who have not experienced it, and maybe for anybody listening who maybe is not even all that well acquainted with the board game on which it is based.
Well, like you said, it's based on that old game that we used to play, and there was a movie that came out that was very tongue-in-cheek and very fun, and it's kind of a cult classic now that people fondly remember. Anyway, the story is a bunch of people are invited to Body Manor, and they don't know why they've been invited, and they've been given aliases. And so we have Miss Scarlet, Miss Peacock, Miss White, Mrs. White, Colonel Mustard, Professor Plum, and Mr. Green are invited, and they have to use those aliases. And we find out that they've been blackmailed, and Wadsworth the butler gets involved, and Yvette the maid, and then we have all of these random people that stop by and get killed throughout the play. And it's very tongue-in-cheek. It's very broad. There's a lot of music that goes with it, and double takes, and it's a whodunit. And we, some people start dying, and we don't know who. And if you're familiar with the game, the idea is to try to figure out who was the murderer, What weapon did they use, and in what location? So it's, you know, stuff like Miss Scarlet with the knife in the dining room, and then nope, that's not it. It's Professor Plum with the rope in the billiard room, you know, and all of these things that you're familiar with the game happen. And it's very fast-paced. We go from place to place extremely quickly. Steve Barnes, our set designer, has given us a game board feel to our set. Mm. So we have some Gothic elements to it, but there's a game board, and we go off one side and we come on the other side, and we're in a different room, and our lights are going to represent hallways and spooky lights, and Norgie's doing our music, and you got underscoring like a movie, you know, where, you know, dum 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 dum, and you know, double takes and stings and stuff. So it's quite the production. And last night we were very excited because we've got these furniture pieces that kind of look like game pieces. They're stools and that we move from place to place that are either the couch or the table or the chair or the dining cart or things like that. It's very stylized, and everybody needs to come in with tongue in cheek. You know, it's Dan has a couple great scenes I don't want to give away where you know, we're not really sure what he's doing and where he is, and is he a good guy or a bad guy, and you have that feeling of all the characters. You don't know until the end what's going to happen. So anyway, it's your classic whodunit with a bunch of crazy people running from room to room, screaming and hollering and laughing and making stupid comments.
Wow, fun. So, Dan Martino, you play the role of the butler, Wadsworth. Tell us a little bit about this character and how he figures, the function that he plays in this story.
Well, he is the traditional English-type butler. He takes care of the household. He helps the guests. It's very much if you've seen Downton Abbey or anything that has a butler in it, that is basically his role. He controls. He pushes everything forward. He tries to keep everybody corralled. He's basically like he's not the host, but he's the host's right hand man, and he's very fun to play. Everything is so quick. He has to be on his toes at all times because these people are just such characters. All six, that we call them the Big Six in the show. You know, he's got to deal with six different types of personalities, which the other actors are just portraying wonderfully and giving me a lot to play off of. And Wadsworth is really, a lot of respects, the straight man. You know, reacting to what's going on around him and trying to deal with the craziness of what's going on around him.
Have you done a role like this before, or does this feel like something of a departure from anything you've done before?
Well, I've only really done musicals for the last 8 years or so, 8-10 years. So this is my first, I guess you would call it a straight play or, you know, non-musical play. So it is kind of a departure for me because I'm used to relying on music, which Doug did mention there's a lot of music, but it's background. You're not singing in it. So it is really a departure for me. However, what I've been finding is because it's so fast-paced, that the dancing and the training that musicals have provided have really helped us with the choreography, basically the choreography in this show. Because it is very choreographed, and you have to be on your spots. You have to be ready for what's coming. You have to be prepared to move, and it is very almost like a stylized dance with all of these characters going through what they're going through. So it's familiar yet a little different.
Yeah, cool.
So well, if I can add to that, one of Dan's one of the highlights of the show is he recaps the entire play and at the end, and so he's a one-man force. Talk about a dance. It's the Big Six and him redoing telling the whole story, and it's from place to place, from mark to mark. It is a dance, and I was very excited last night. They really nailed it, and I was very excited to see that when seven people move as one, it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
And I had a little bit of training for that, playing Max Bialystok and the Producers, but that was in song form where I recapped the show, but it's a song. So you have the beat and the rhythm, and that's what this has become. It's gelling so well that the beat and the rhythm keeps pushing everything forward, and that's been a wonderful experience.
Cool. Doug, what kind of challenge has this posed for you as director? It sounds like this has maybe some of the same challenging elements of a farce in terms of something that moves really fast with kind of intricate interlocking pieces, if you will. What has it been like to put this together?
Well, I think the hardest thing is it's based on a movie. And a movie, you can do anything at any location and timing and props. One of the challenges, the biggest challenge, is what we call the givens in the play. They have to knock on a door. They have to use a phone. One of the characters has to pull out gloves, documents, a gun, something with fingerprints in it, and a letter, and out of where, I don't know. We'll find out. And then there's no place to put it down. They run from room to room, place to place, furniture, windows. Dead bodies have to magically appear, secret passageways. So in a big budget proscenium show where, you know, you have maybe a turntable and everything up against the back wall, those givens are easier, opening windows and having drapes. In our stage, with the actors performing for audience members on three sides, it all has to be stylized. We can't bring in a pool table and seven different interiors and full dining rooms and full studies and libraries and things like that. So we have to do things stylized. Dead bodies have to travel in blackout. So I have to distract the audience where I get them to watch something down left while the dead bodies sneak off stage, where, you could use traps in a different theater. So, all of these gimmicks, all of these gags in our space have to be revisited in a very creative way. And I think we've done that. Some things are very stylized where, like the furniture is stylized. And I think people will find that be very theatrical and not lacking anything. It's not like, I wish they would have had a period sofa. I think they will think the game pieces is a very cool idea. So that's been a challenge, and I think we've worked through that pretty well. But we'll find out in tech rehearsal, which is coming up. It's like, okay, where'd you put the gun? The gun has to be on your person somewhere. All right, you have to fall down, and now you have to get up. And how are we going to do that? So we've got some of those things to work out over the weekend.
Mm. Dan, who would you suggest should come see Clue on stage? I mean, what kind of a show is this? Is it for all ages? And is it for, anybody in particular that you can think of that would especially enjoy this?
Oh, anybody, obviously anybody who was around in the 80s. I was 14 or 15 years old when the movie came out. And this is really based, as well as the board game, on the movie. So there will be a lot of nostalgia. A lot of the one-liners that were in existence in the movie are in the show. But really anybody who just wants to have a good, fun, laugh-out-loud evening, just to get out of the house and join others and laugh with others to come out. Actually, a friend of mine asked if he could bring his kids who are, 8, 9, 10 years old. And what I said to him is, aside from people getting killed, it's a great show for that age group. There's nothing really heavy in it. It's just, a lot of people having fun in a quote-unquote scary situation. And it's really for all ages. Correct me if I'm wrong. I can't think of a single thing that would be bad other than people getting murdered. But like Doug said, it's funny. Mm. It's not heavy murder.
As funny as murder can be.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
Yeah, as light as murder can be.
So the play opens this coming weekend. It runs through early April, the first weekend in April, maybe?
Yep, to the 3rd. Okay. So we open the 18th and we close the 3rd.
And if people want more information?
They can call the box office at 262-633-4218, or they can order tickets online, or you can stop by the box office Monday through Friday from noon to 6.
Very good. And, of course, there's other things on the way for the remainder of the season, including a little musical called Mamma Mia. So people can get information about that as well. But in the meantime, the matter at hand is Clue on stage, opening this Friday night and running through the 3rd of April. Doug Instant is the director. Dan Martino, a member of the cast, as the butler, Wadsworth. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me in this portion of the morning show. Best wishes to you and everybody associated with Clue on stage.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much.